For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Well, after nearly 24 years on the job, University of Oklahoma President David Boren is stepping down. Boren took the position in 1994 after serving Oklahoma in the U.S. Senate and as governor. Ryan, your thoughts on Boren stepping away after 50 years in public service?
Well, it's important to note that he's not stepping away entirely. He made it very clear he's going to step down as president. He's going to remain on until there is a new president in place so that there's no disruption in the administration there. He's going to continue to teach political science. He said that he's going to start a blog so that he can begin to voice his own political opinions without the kind of tethers that he's had at the university. But you know, this is a historic day for the university. Here's a tenure that is probably the greatest tenure in the university's history. And we're talking about a statesman who is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, political figure in Oklahoma history. And I think that it will be difficult to imagine, given the current political climate, that anyone could rise to the level of a David Boren in today's world. And so I think that it's a tremendous loss for the university, but we're all deeply grateful for the contributions that he's made to the university. As somebody from Seminole, David Boren's hometown and the place that he still calls his hometown, and who held the House seat that he used to hold, he is somebody that I've always looked up to as the kind of idea of what public service means in Oklahoma.
Neva.
Well, as he himself said, for the last two or three years, he's been thinking about this day coming. And I think the way he's going about it, as Ryan said, making certain that there's going to be a smooth transition, talking about next year at the end of this academic year kind of being that point. But if someone's not selected and not ready to kind of take the mantle, that there'll be some extension in that timeline. And I think that's very wise. It gives a calm a calmness to what is going to be clearly a very big change in higher education as well as at the University of Oklahoma. And Ryan, you're right. Someone who's had 50 years of public service, starting as a legislator, as governor, United States senator, then at the University of Oklahoma. It's one of those stellar careers that everyone looks to and says, not only is it a career in public service, but it is a career that will be written for, I think, decades to come about all of the accomplishments. You look at the university today, 23, 24 years later, and all that has happened under David Boren's presidency, it's enormous. It's unprecedented. Right now, even if you take the fact that the University of Oklahoma is now number 10 among universities in the amount of giving to the institution. There have been so many incredible landmark events that have taken place, and I think that in the course of the next months, as this begins to transition, we'll hear a lot more about that. But I think the vast number of Oklahomans who have already said, that you applaud his career and wish him the very best. And as you say, Ryan, he's not someone that's stepping into the twilight. He's just opening another chapter in his life, and hopefully he'll write some books and do some things that I think a lot of people have encouraged him through the years to do that time's not permitted.
I'm excited to hear his political voice. He's not been shy from political matters at the state capitol.
But it's a little harder.
It's
also
a little harder.
You've got to be,
But I got to tell you, I stood and had to speak after him, which nobody should have to do. but I spoke after him at a rally at the University of Oklahoma shortly after the Trump administration announced the Muslim ban, the Muslim travel ban. He stood up with a bullhorn with hundreds of students around him, saying that the university stood with solidarity with its Muslim students and students from those countries. He stood up for DACA students recently. So I think that his political voice is desperately needed right now, and I'm excited to see it back in the arena.
How hard is it going to be to replace him?
Well,
it's impossible.
It's a tall order.
Well,
you don't really replace. You just find someone to open up a new chapter, and hopefully someone who has has not only the resume, but has the ability to really continue to unify all parts of, quote, the OU family and Oklahomans at a time when higher ed has been in a very difficult position in terms of funding, in terms of some of the attitudes out there about what should happen overall in higher ed. So I think it's going to be a tall order, and I think the OU regents will be very deliberative in the process of trying to find just that right person.
The legislature kicks off a special session to fix the budget on Monday. The main purpose of the session is to fix the $215 million hole created when the state Supreme Court shot down a $1.50 per pack cigarette fee. Neva, any chances this is going to go quickly?
I certainly wouldn't bet on it. I think the fact that we've not seen any kind of discussion about a deal, any kind of discussion really out of the House or the Senate or the governor's office, let alone all three entities really making a concerted effort to come up with something that they can all hopefully live with. I think what it speaks to is that they'll come in session, and the potential, unfortunately, is there that they may be in for a few days in recess and continue to drag this on because they can't come up with a plan that seems to be able to get the votes necessary in either body. And I think this is regrettable, and it makes it, I think it puts a lot of pressure back on the governor who called this special session, and clearly there just hasn't been a plan out there of any nature that I've seen or even heard, you know, behind kind of in the corridors of the Capitol being openly discussed that seems to have real merit or seems to have any real strong leadership trying to push it.
Ryan.
You know, we've been staring down this structural budget deficit that the state of Oklahoma is currently reeling in right now for, you know, close to a decade, if not over a decade. So in each legislative session, the problems have gotten worse. The cuts to core services in the state of Oklahoma have only been deeper and more harmful to the people that they're meant to serve. And with each legislative session, we'll walk into that legislative session with a lot of fanfare about this is the year that folks are going to get to work on this, and they haven't done it. They had months to do it earlier this year. Neva's right. We haven't heard any sort of a plan, you know, going into the special session. It's difficult to imagine, or it's difficult to be optimistic, at least, that they're going to walk into this special session and walk away with any sort of a plan that mitigates deeper cuts to core services, including education and healthcare and infrastructure. It's difficult to imagine that they're going to find recurring revenue sources when they couldn't do it in the months prior during regular session.
Well, and the difficulty is, what do they really want to accomplish? Right. Are they coming in to fix the budget hole? Are they coming in to fix every wrong problem that continues to be faced by every legislature ad infinitum? And that's the problem. I mean, they can't decide how to really approach this, and consequently, we're at gridlock once again.
Was the governor then just a little premature in calling for this without any kind of plan in place?
It begs the question, would you call a special session and not have some sort of a mutual agreement with leadership to know at least what the course is that's going to be set, and that there's some reasonable expectation that you're going to be able to do that in and out and get it done, as opposed to something where, I mean, are we going to recess and recess and recess? Is this going to go on until we get forced into the drop-dead time when you do have to finally call a special to a close or run concurrent or whatever is going to go on? I mean, it's just once again, I think for the public, they look at the legislature and what's going on or not going on and say, who is going to lead this ship and who's going to figure out a plan that we can all at least think something constructive is being done?
And there's a sense that maybe the governor just called this special session out of desperation because there wasn't going to be a plan. And your choices are either don't call a special session and let the automatic cuts go into place, or at least give the legislature an opportunity to come up with something. And I think that that's probably where the governor's at right now. There's no plan here, and we've got to do something. Now, here's where I think that, you know, the governor, I've said this a million times on this show, the governor has an enormous amount of political capital, and she's got to get out of the governor's office. She's got to get out of the executive blue room. She's got to go to these communities. She's got to sit in the speaker's district. She needs to go to the Rotary Club in the speaker's district. She needs to go to these communities and lobby for a plan, because if she's not using that capital within those districts, then I think that it's a missed opportunity for the governor to set the agenda.
And unfortunately, those kind of in the political arena would speculate or argue that given the governor's approval numbers, and just when you look at the polls, I mean, she is not a popular political figure right now, and so that does increase the volatility of all of these events. If you go out into the, you know, into the highways and byways, and you try to make your case across Oklahoma, you better have a plan, and you better stick with that plan that you're articulating, or the public's going to reject it. And I think that's what we've seen time and time again. And these lawmakers, I think, are reticent to have other people, you know, kind of in the mix, you know, calling out a plan when they may or may not have signed on to it to start with.
Well, I can't imagine anybody wants this for the next election, going into the next election.
I think if something doesn't happen in this special session, we shouldn't look for any sort of resolution in this next session in an election year. And now I would say that even given the governor's approval ratings, she's still a governor. The governor is the biggest political celebrity in the state of Oklahoma. She walks into a room in any of these legislative districts, and she is automatically more popular and more attractive to those folks there as somebody they want to talk to than any state representative or any state senator. And I'm saying that as a state representative and all the legislative ego that goes along with that.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that point that, you know, obviously the governor of any state, I mean, holds a tremendous amount of political clout and has the ability to advance very bold ideas and agendas. And what we've not seen is a real concerted effort, I think, through the course of the last several years to attempt to do that.
Yeah.
Senate President Pro Tem Mike Schultz wants a new job. The term-limited leader of the Senate says he is applying to become the executive director of the Oklahoma Farm Bureau. He says he plans to finish out his legislative term. Ryan, would there be any concern over a conflict of interest if he gets the job before leaving office?
Well, I think that there's a conflict of interest in him saying that he wants the job, the applying for the job in and of itself. You know, we have campaign finance laws in the state of Oklahoma. The maximum contribution that you can receive as a state legislator is $5,000 from the Farm Bureau PAC. They can give you $5,000. Farm Bureau is one of the most effective lobbying entities, not just in Oklahoma, but in the country, in the nation. And so they can give any member $5,000 out of their PAC. Here, what they've got dangling over him is the promise of a job that carries a salary that I've got to imagine is well into the six figures. Mm-hmm. This is a job that has an enormous amount of responsibility, but also carries with it an enormous, you know, compensation package. And so for him to walk into this legislative session and have to wonder, are my votes for this, and not even just as a member, but as a leader of the caucus, setting that agenda, setting those priorities, I think that it creates a real, even if there's no impropriety, the appearance here is one that the president should walk away from.
But to be realistic, I mean, the expectation that that he wanted this job at some point, you know, after he left political office is the worst kept secret in the Capitol. So, I mean, here's someone who worked for many years as a field representative for the Farm Bureau. He's been a paid employee of the Farm Bureau. He's someone who knows it intimately. He's a farmer by background. Mm-hmm. He's someone who would be ideally situated to be courted into wanting to recruit for this position now that it's vacant or we have an interim person that's been named in that spot. So, I mean, I think that to say that he's not been someone who has absolutely been interested in farm and ag issues from day one since he came in 2006 to the state Senate, what's changed? I mean, he's always going to be one of their strongest advocates inside that building for those issues. And this just may be an opportunity once he leaves. Now, to me, the bigger issue and one of the bigger speculations has been, does he wait for another year to assume that job, or does he do like some have as they come to the end of the stretch on being term limited and decide that, you know, timing is right
and
I'm going to go ahead and jump now rather than at the complete end of my term. So that may be even a bigger question. He says he won't leave, but you know, we've seen stranger things happen on a timeline, and clearly I don't think that anyone expected that to happen with a special session looming, but it very well might, although at this juncture with someone in place kind of as a placeholder, it does leave the opportunity for him to apply and maybe have an announcement date down the road.
If we had a trial judge that was, you know, so just looking at another branch of government, if we had a trial judge and a partner from a firm was coming to try a case in front of that judge, and that firm, and this judge had made it known that he wanted to work for that firm, I think we'd all be concerned about that. And so I think that, you know, that same conflict of interest rests here. And I know that, you know, that the senator has been a strong supporter of foreign dealer, but he should still be independent.
It's the same conflict there for someone who wants to be a legislator and then wants to run for insurance commissioner or wants to run for labor commissioner or wants to run for lieutenant governor or United States senator. I mean, that's part of just the political give and take. And I think to assume, particularly when someone already has that resume and already has been that forceful advocate inside the Capitol to start with, this is not, I think that's kind of apples and oranges what you're describing.
Well, the endorsements for upcoming elections are already starting to roll in, and we start with Todd Lamb, who is running for governor, getting an early backing from Oklahoma City Congressman Steve Russell. Neva, does this seem too early to you?
No, I think what we're seeing nowadays in these campaigns as they extend out longer and longer is that you have to have something to kind of throw out there to your supporters and to those that you're trying to get to support you to say, hey, I'm the person that's building a campaign, raising money, getting a lot of support. So the natural people you go to are elected officials, whether they're legislators that you've served with or they're in the instance of Steve Russell, I mean, they were in the state Senate together, Todd Lamb and Steve Russell. So you go to those folks and you try to tie them up early, and then you try to be able to use those and roll them out over an extended period of time to help your campaign maintain some momentum.
While they might have worked together, this is Oklahoma City Mayor Mick Cornett's area. So is this kind of thumbing his nose at the mayor?
It potentially could be. And I think that, you know, that's really who these endorsements, I think, signal are folks at the top. You know, this is, you know, grass top level politics. This isn't talking about your folks. This isn't about voters at all.
Right.
You know, voters could really care less what Congressman Russell thinks about
really about any
race.
Endorsement for the
right.
most part
sure.
nowadays. And endorsements are a campaign tool. They're not really an influencer with the voters at large, I think.
So they build relationships among the candidates. You know, it ingratiates Lieutenant Governor Lamb to Congressman Russell. They've got this relationship. And the other thing that happens is that it sends a signal to Congressman Russell's contributors that this, you know, so if Congressman Russell has contributors right. that are unique to him, and Lieutenant Governor Lamb wants access to those folks, this gives a signal to those contributors that this is where the congressman is leaning. And so this again, it doesn't matter, you know.
We're dealing still with 10%,
yeah,
10%
yeah.
of the universe
yeah.
or less
yeah.
that are really paying attention to these types of activities.
Well, the bigger endorsement, I think, is this next one. The race for Oklahoma City mayor takes place February 13th, so it's a lot sooner. That's of next year. The Fraternal Order of Police is backing Senator David Holt. And does it surprise you, Ryan, that a police union is basically mm-hmm. supporting a Republican lawmaker for the city job?
Well, what really surprises me here is that the FOP, their agenda stands in stark contrast to the work that Senator Holt has done to advance criminal justice reform in the state of Oklahoma. Here's a guy who passed civil asset forfeiture reforms in the Oklahoma legislature, something that FOP is adamantly against. He has, you know, supported criminal justice reform and sentencing measures at the state level. FOP adamantly against state question 780 and 781. For, you know, my so that's, I think, interesting. And frankly, I wouldn't want the FOP's endorsement. I mean, here's an organization whose only mission at this point is the preservation of the status quo. And the status quo is wildly unacceptable. And they're, if you think about what they could be doing, they're entirely silent in the areas where they should be speaking up. You know, they're speaking up against criminal justice reform, but they're silent every time a cop kills somebody. We had a police officer shoot a deaf man because he couldn't hear commands this week. And, you know, FOP's Facebook page and their website, totally silent in that regard. My friends at CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations in Oklahoma, every time somebody who purports to be a Muslim blows something up anywhere in the world, they've got to have a press conference and distance themselves from those folks. You know, that's ridiculous in and of itself. But FOP, they won't say anything about any cop, good or bad. And that's, I think, a missed opportunity on their part. And frankly, I wouldn't want their endorsement.
Neva.
Well, I think candidates for mayor certainly look at police and fire as a place to get potentially one or two endorsements that with the public – resonate. I mean, because the public pay attention and they hear police, you know, support, they hear fire support, and that does translate to some real, I think, to some real positive.
Also, any elected official will tell you how important a union endorsement is.
Well, and I think, and again, I think at the municipal level, I mean, it's a different style of race, and frankly, police and fire, I mean, they're looking to pick the winner. I mean, those unions, I mean, are looking to find someone that they can either they have a longstanding relationship with, or they want to be able to build a rapport and relationship with, and not have a contentious environment. So I think this again is one of those instances where with this election coming up very soon. Yeah. I mean, when we really look at the calendar, it's important for at this point all of the candidates out there to try to strike any kind of deal they can in terms of bringing as much support from these key groups like police and fire
and
to the table.
Might be more favorable for the union itself if they think that David Holt's going to be the
winner.
Well,
they represent a membership, and the membership typically does have an inclination to move usually one direction or the other on particularly the mayor's race. I mean, you know, sometimes in council races, you know, less in other races, but that they have always been not only in Oklahoma but all across the country are courted groups in terms of getting an endorsement that people do hold value to.
And hopefully, what this means with FOP coming to Holt's camp here, what I hope this means is that FOP is coming to Holt and Holt's not going to them. I haven't heard any indication from Senator Holt that he's abdicating his criminal justice reform platform that he's built for himself in the state Senate. So if we've got a strong leader in the mayor's office who's committed to criminal justice reform, you know, I don't care who endorses him as long as they're not selling out their previous positions.
Supporters of a monument to the Bill of Rights are starting a campaign to raise $850,000 to place it on the east side of the state capitol. Neva, this monument, unlike previous ones, appears to have support from all sides.
It does. I mean, it was unanimously approved by the House and the Senate, unanimously, signed by the governor. It is something that I think, unlike other, you know, more volatile monuments that we've talked about in previous months, I think this is a situation where there's pretty broad support, and I think they'll raise the money, and I think certainly that this is one of those instances where not only Oklahoma's done it, Arizona already has one. I think there are two other states, Texas and Alabama, perhaps, that have legislation or have things underway to do the same thing. So I would hope that this does not become some lightning rod divisive instance where people are going to take this to task, because frankly, the lawmakers themselves, the Preservation Commission, and kind of all of the important parties to this point that have moved it along have shown strong support for it.
Ryan.
Neva's my friend. I hate to crush her hopes. But here I go.
Here I go. I knew this was coming.
Well, you know, if they're going to raise $850,000, they should put it into a litigation fund for the state to offset all of the litigation that the state has to engage in by passing unconstitutional laws. You know, to have a Bill of Rights monument out there and to have this legislature pass it unanimously is laughable. I mean, it's just absurd to the highest degree to put this out on the Capitol Plaza, where this legislature is infamous, not just in Oklahoma, but around the country for passing unconstitutional pieces of legislation. So, I mean, it's
so
like
you're
somebody,
saying that this is unconstitutional?
I'm not saying it's unconstitutional. I'm saying it's hypocritical. I mean, it's like leaving the bar and going straight to Sunday school. And that's what they did here. And so I want to, you know, good, have it out there. I hope some of them go read it. Frankly, I don't think it's going to make a ton of difference in the products that we're going to see coming out of this legislature. But I'm glad it's out there. Is, you know, what I hope doesn't happen is like with the Capitol Dome, that we don't have a bunch of sponsors, corporate sponsors, tacked on to the monument itself. You know, I'm sure that some of the sponsors will be friends and people that I like, but I don't care how much I love them. It would be gross to see their name on the Bill of Rights outside the Oklahoma Capitol.
Hopefully there will be no names on it.
Hopefully not, right.
The Bill of Rights up there. Yeah, exactly. So thank you so very much. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.